This is Talk at 10. It's your weekday interview program on KRTS, Marfa Public Radio. I'm Tom Michael, your host for this episode, and we're joined in the studio by Peter Brotzman and Jason Adashevitz, and they are here as guests of Ballroom Marfa. They'll be performing tonight at the Crawley Theater at 8 p.m., and we welcome them both. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, just last week in the New York Times, there was a review of your work that was very complimentary. Refined but violent was the subhead. And they made a case, Mr. Brotzman, about you being the elder of free jazz and Jason being half your age. Can you tell us how this tour came about?
I have heard Jason about 2 years ago in Chicago with a band he is usually working quite a bit, I think. And I wasn't so interested in the band, but this young man on the vibraphone was of interest because he handled the not-so-easy instrument in a way I liked very much. And so I was asked to do one night at the Vision Festival in the same year, I think. And so I had a chance to invite a couple of guys, and among them was a duo with Jason. And that was not only successful, but it was fun. And so we decided together with my friend Michael Ayles to set up a little tour in the States. And I must say, it's a pleasure. It's fun. And we even make some money compared to other situations in this country.
And where is home for you?
I am still living in Germany, Wuppertal, near Cologne, a middle-sized town, maybe known through the dance company Pina Bausch in the last 20 years. But I would say Chicago, over all the years, is a kind of second home for me. A lot of musicians I'm working with, a lot of other friends, so I'm trying to be as often as possible over.
And that's Peter Brotzman, Jason Adashevitz, also here. You are a Chicagoan, Jason, and maybe you can tell your side of the story on how you met. You got a call from Peter. You weren't about to say no.
Well, getting back to Peter talking about Chicago, that's how I first learned of Peter, was working at the Jazz Record Mart. So this was back in 98, I believe. I don't know if you know what the Jazz Record Mart
is. I do.
It's the record store owned by Bob Kester, who
it's owns amazing.
The Delmark label. And Bruno Johnson was working at the store also, and he was releasing Peter's records as the Chicago Tentet. So my first exposure to Peter was through his Chicago band, which was the Tentet. And then after that, it was when I kind of discovered his earlier recordings was working at the Jazz Record Mart.
What a great story. A Jazz Record Mart near Northside, North Loop. And in fact, I have a poster in my office right now here at Marfa called Peter Brotzman Chicago Tentet. So that's some of the work you did. It looks like this poster dates from 2004.
That might be possible.
So you went on tour. This is a short tour, about 2 or 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Nearly 3 weeks, yeah.
What are the other stops?
The last stop will be Austin. This is our second to last stop. We were fortunate to play Chicago 2 times, which was fantastic.
Jazz Showcase?
The Jazz Showcase. That would have been fantastic. we played at this fantastic bar called The Hideout.
There's some Austin connection with that bar as well.
There is definitely some Austin connection with that. There's a lot of connection with that bar. There's a series that happens every Wednesday there. That's their the jazz and improvised series. But mostly that bar, there's a lot of roots music that is presented there. But I actually, on the way over here, Nikki was asking us what our fondest moment was. And for me, it was to actually bring it home to Chicago. It was the first time that I was able to play with Peter in Chicago. It seemed like every every time we were playing, it was in New York or it was in Europe or you know, on this tour, it was all on the East Coast, so it was fantastic to finally bring it back home.
In the New York Times, describing your Greenwich Village appearance, they talk about the physicality of attacking the instruments on stage. What are people in store for as far as performance tonight?
I don't know. I mean, we are just two musicians to try to find a way to play music together, and all that physical side. I mean, okay, I always have liked it because, I mean, I'm not the sort of the very sensitive saxophone player, probably. I might be known as a very violent guy, which is nonsense, of course, too. It's the whole range of the horn which interests me, and Jason, I think, he found his very personal way to play that really not easy instrument. And I mean, if I might add, I mean, vibraphone never was my favorite instrument. So for me, it was a nice, good challenge to work with one of the guys. And, as I said, I'm happy to do it.
Jason,
that was the first conversation that we had at the hideout, and he was telling me how much he didn't like the instrument. It was fantastic.
Well, Jason, you'll have to defend.
And then he was like, "Man, we should play together."
Is it as difficult as Peter says?
The instrument itself. I look at the instrument from a number of different ways. I started out as a drummer, so the drummer in me definitely comes out in it. I love the physicality of the drums, and that's why I fell in love with the vibraphone, because of the physicality too. Is it a hard instrument to play? There's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on with it.
I mean, what I mean is the way it is played mostly. It sounds very sweet. It sounds. It has a kind of esoteric function in some of the musics, and of course, I don't like that too much. And I mean, the vibraphone player I like still most is Lyle Hampton, and of course, I like Milt Jackson, but always in the context of the band they are playing in, and. I think the way Jason is playing the instrument, he widens the range by a lot of very special sound effects he is doing. And he mentioned it, as a drummer, he has the right rhythmic feeling for it. So it fits quite well, yeah.
We're talking to German saxophonist Peter Brutzmann and Chicago vibraphonist Jason Adashevitz. If you want to look, we're going to play in a moment some of their collaborative work. Mr. Brutzmann's discography goes back to Nipples, 1969, Truce, 1975.
A little earlier.
Okay. Well, maybe it came out in the States in 69.
No, the Nipples came out 69, that's right, but there were two other productions before that.
I'm just giving a quick overview of.
Okay.
If people are interested, some of the more celebrated works: Three Points in a Mountain, 1979; Three Rocks in a Pine, 1999; 14 Love Poems plus 10 more, huge acclaim in 2004. Jason's work includes the albums Roll Down, Varmint, Spacer, and Sunrooms. I wanted to play a little bit of Going All Fancy. This is from Aramite Records. Is this the first recorded production that the both of you had done?
Correct, yeah. Okay. And that's the Vision Festival concert, too.
Right, the Vision Festival last year, and that's when you... That was the first time
we ever played together.
Well, let's give it a listen. This is the title track. We'll hear some of this now. Recorded in June 2011 in New York City.
Thank you.
And that's a selection from the collaboration of Peter Brutzman and Jason Edishevitz. It's called Going All Fancy. It'll be available tonight. That's a Crawley Theater tonight at 8 o'clock. It's a Ballroom Marfa production. Have you been to the venue?
Not yet. We have planned to go after the show, yeah.
It's a beautiful venue, and looking forward to a great crowd tonight. I should also say, Peter, you've been a visual artist, or at least you started your career as a visual artist.
I still am, yes.
Still are?
I can say so.
Are you attracted to the works here of Donald Judd and other minimalists?
Of course, I know the work from Donald Judd from the early times. Yeah, and I know a little bit of Christopher Wolf's work. We met him at the last Chicago concert. I know his father very well. So, and I have heard, of course, about Marfa. I will look around today or tomorrow and we'll see what I can find. It looks all very fancy, I must say, what I've seen until now. So I will see if I like it or not.
And Jason, you've done work not only with other free jazz performers, but Chicago indie rockers. We talked a little bit about Tortoise and C and Cake and other people in the post rock or math rock or you know kind of orchestral rock as well.
Yeah, I mean, my first touring experiences were with a bunch of Chicago, not post rock bands. I think they got lumped into like the alt country category mm-hmm. back in the like late '90s. A band called Pinetop Seven, a singer-songwriter actually from Austin, Edith Frost, played a little bit with that band, Calexico.
From Arizona.
So, yeah, so my actually touring in Texas, the last time I was through El Paso was with bands like that, like just in like this whole area, but never came through Marfa.
Do these worlds meet? Free jazz and indie rock?
In Chicago, they definitely do. Yeah, that's how I was introduced through it, definitely.
Why?
Well, first of all, I dropped out of school. I was at DePaul University for about 3 years studying jazz. That didn't work out so well. And I got out of school and basically discovered the city. And I got hooked up with this band. And the band was this Pinetop Seven band. And I think it was just getting involved in a scene in Chicago, and then all those scenes just kind of overlap in the city, definitely. But why? I don't know. I mean, the community is very tight.
I think I met one of the members of AACM on busking on the train platform some time ago. Phil Caron, maybe?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Peter, I should ask your work with Jason, and you've collaborated with others quite a bit. You've seen the phrase in the New York Times, for example, "Eldered statesman of free jazz." Free jazz have been around quite a long time. Where is it going? How is it morphing?
I'm still trying to find out where it is going every night.
Oh, yeah.
So, and to start with, I never liked the term free jazz because it gives always the wrong implication for the music. I think we are still, or I feel myself as a part of history, let's say, maybe not of American jazz, but of European, German jazz, improvised music, which, of course, has other roots and sources than American music, that for sure. But I think since the 60s, it was not only a one-way street that music came from the U.S. and was played in the same way in Europe. I think people like Derek Bailey, Misha Mengelberg, Willem Breuker, Han Benning, myself, Evan Parker. I think we contributed quite a bit to the worldwide development of improvised music. But I personally, as a old-fashioned tenor player, alto player, I feel quite familiar with being a jazz musician, so I'm happy with that. And where the music is going, I don't know. I think nobody knows, because it depends not only on musicians. It depends on the economic situation. It depends how politics, cultural politics develop. And if you look around in this country or in Europe, you can't be too optimistic. Because, you know, the times jazz music was a big part of economic industry, entertainment industry, is a long time over. And we here in the States, as well as in Europe, we are on the side of the, let's say, cultural mainstream. And that means that it's very hard to find money to work. And, you know, cultural work without support is a difficult thing to do. And though the situation until, let's say, 2000 in Europe looked a bit better than here in the States, it's going down the river in Europe too. So, I mean, I can't complain myself. But if I look around for the young people to find places to work and to play and to get at least paid a little bit, the places disappear. And, you know, old-fashioned as I am, what you learn, what you need for the music, you learn on the road. On stage, every night, somewhere else, seeing other people, other colleagues, other musicians. And this exchange is going to disappear. And that's a drag.
Well, that's an excellent support about excellent comment about public support for this art, especially avant-garde art, which is often can find an audience, but it's hard to find funders.
The funny thing, we always, where I go, if that is Brazil or Mexico or some countryside in Germany, the audience is there, is even willing to travel for hours. Mm-hmm. Or in Japan, the same situation. But to do all that, and the travel, for example, eats up so much money that the fee for the musicians is, since decades, staying on the same level or even going down at the moment. So that's a problem. That is a big influence of the development for the music too, of course, especially for the young ones.
Well, let's underscore our thanks to Ballroom Marfa for bringing this important cultural programming to Marfa again tonight at the Crawley Theater at 8 o'clock. Peter Brutzman and Jason Adashevitz, and they have a piece that we're going to play later, Going All Fancy, available tonight as well, vibraphonist and saxophonist. Jason, and the reason why I put this question to Peter, it seemed like in improvisational jazz and avant-garde jazz, you also seem comfortable with the noise side of it too, the stuff that is pretty much way out there. Jason, what's your feeling of the big family, the big lumped family of free jazz and the direction some artists go?
Well, I agree with Peter where the name free jazz, I think it's just jazz.
Mm-hmm.
But
I guess, yeah, I'd asked about, you know, your work with the Japanese artist Haino and some others.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with a lot of the Merzbow people, and especially the work with Keiji Haino is of great interest. He is a fantastic guy on stage. He is a great, very sensitive musician, and I like to work with him very much. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you find in Japan, you find sometimes some surprises.
And there's place for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jason, you were going to finish this tour with Peter. And what's next for you?
What's next for me? Oh, man, there is definitely a lot of stuff coming up.
You don't have a whole lot of recorded work.
Under my own name? No, I guess not. I only have a few records. I have a trio called Sunrooms that will be doing a lot of traveling. We'll be going down to Brazil. Peter mentioned Brazil, and the energy of Brazil down there is fantastic. I always love playing down there.
Do you agree with Peter about his point on touring and honing your craft, his old-fashioned point about that?
Well, to add to what Peter was talking about earlier, as a younger musician in Chicago, it's impossible to make a living in your own city. So for us, we have to travel. It's not impossible in Chicago to present your music. Every night of the week, there's a venue that you can present your original music, whether it's compositions, whether it's just freely improvised. So that's not lacking. But at the end of the day, maybe you'll make, you know, $50 if you're lucky. So in order to actually make somewhat of a living doing what I'm doing, it definitely brings you on the road.
We've been talking to Peter Brutzman and Jason Edishevitz. They're performing tonight as guests of Ballroom Marfa. That's here in Marfa at the Crawley Theater. It's an 8 o'clock show. Peter, I guess I should give you the last word here. You've been working with Jason this time, and you've been saxophone, vibraphone. Are there other things that you want to do that are on your short list musically?
I'm lucky to say that the group of people I'm working with, it's quite fulfilling my work schedule. And I'm always happy to find a young man like Jason, for example, and we will go on for sure with a duo or maybe some extended band. For next year, I have a couple of things coming up in Europe where Jason will be a part of. And I like to work with my Chicago friends. The oldest of them is Hammy Drake. He is so busy as I am, so we don't see each other very often. But we had a chance to play again in Chicago the other night together, and this will go on somehow. And with Ken Vandermark, Mas Williams, Fred Lomberg, and all the names of the Tented we have coming up, Tented tour, the first half of November in Europe, up and down from Finland to Italy, and so I'm really happy with that situation. I'm always looking forward to meet somebody else. I miss trumpet players nowadays, so I would like to find one. But okay, it will come. And I mean, if I may add that, we talked about Japanese guys beside KG. I work a lot with younger guys, with very old guys my age. I've started again to work with them 2 years ago. Takeo Moriyama, a drummer, very famous Yamashita trio, and Akira Sakata or Sato, a piano player. And all that is, yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's just pleasure, and that's why I still travel around the world, because otherwise it's not possible to do. And of course there are some old ones I would have liked to meet, like Ornette, for example. He still is one of my you use the word here in your language, hero very often. But he's one of my favorites, of course, and I sometimes had the chance to listen to Sonny Rollins in Europe and
live.
Pardon?
Live.
Live. Yeah, sure. I've listened to him live a lot of times in Germany and last time in Norway, and he is always a very, very inspiring man. I mean, he's doing still, even if he is getting a little old.
What about one of our Texas natives who, as far as I know, hasn't come back to Texas, Ornette Coleman?
Ornette, I mean, as I mentioned before, he's still, I think, especially for a saxophone player, the most important influence in the last years. I like his phrasing. I like his tone. I like the beautiful pieces he writes. And I think he is a great man, yes.
Have you worked with him? He seems like such a cipher, an enigma, this guy.
We just were sitting once in the same cafe in New York while I was together with Bill Laswell, and Laswell was producing things for him. So we sat hello, but that was all. No, he's something else, yeah.
Well, thanks to you both. We've been talking to Peter Brutzman and Jason Adashevitz, and we're going to play the final track off the compilation off the album, the recent album on Aramite Records, Going All Fancy. This is called Swinging to the Leaf. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank
My
you.
Pleasure.